This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of The Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to The Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 414. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about road trips, maritime and Gaelic history, and seafood as we go to Nova Scotia. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into this week's episode, I do have two news stories for you. In the first story, the Carnival Ecstasy rescued 41 Cuban migrants at sea. And you can imagine how the passengers felt about that. They were unhappy. They were unhappy because this caused them to redirect from Cozumel, where they were going to go, and instead sail to the Bahamas. While I understand that this may have ruined their vacation, I think perhaps there's a larger picture here as well. Perhaps they'd be interested in a new ship from Olsen Cruise Lines. Olsen Cruise Lines is planning on letting the passengers vote every 48 hours on where their next destination will be. They'll be given two different destinations, and they'll get to vote, and the ship will go wherever they decide. Let's just hope they don't have to vote on whether they're going to rescue anyone. For links to both those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. In the sponsor slot this week, I learned something interesting about the Chase Sapphire credit card, which is the one I use. In addition to not having any foreign transaction fees, it actually includes up to $5,000 of travel insurance for your trip, as well as trip interruptions. So that is something that's a nice perk. If you're interested in a new travel credit card, check out amateurtraveler.com/credit card. I'd like to welcome back to the show Sherry Ott. Sherry has come to talk to us about Nova Scotia. Sherry, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here again.
And Sherry, for those of you who don't know, is one of my favorite travel bloggers, and this is her fourth time on the show we're deciding. She did a show with us way back, I think 7 years ago, before she was a travel blogger, talking about traveling solo as a woman, and has also been back on the show talking about a visit to Lebanon, and then also to Costa Brava in Spain. So wonderful to talk to you again, Sherry.
Thanks. I know we have a good variety of locations there.
And for those of you who enjoy Sherry's blog, I have to say one of my contributions to the world is the fact that I talked Sherry into being a travel blogger. So I feel good about that. So
yes, we won't. I won't tell my parents that.
Yes, please don't. Don't ever introduce us. So Nova Scotia, why should someone go to Nova Scotia?
It's this little gem in Canada. I say go to Nova Scotia if you have an interest in kind of like small town living, simple seafaring heritage. That's to me what Nova Scotia is about. I mean, their biggest city is Halifax, and I think it's like 300,000 people. The whole region of Nova Scotia itself is around a million, it might be under a million. So it's a small area, but it's definitely kind of this maritime history, has an interesting cultural history also with Scotland and Gaelic culture. They've got some really interesting sites with the Bay of Fundy. But for me, it was really about kind of those small towns, local experiences, and really trying to see the whole region. I went with my mother. I took her on a road trip, basically, and we had about 12 days on the road there.
And you were there in summertime.
I was there in June, yes, which I found out is not their tourist season. It's not their season. It starts in July. So that's one thing to know. I thought for sure, like, oh, we're there during heavy tourist season, but it wasn't. It was a shoulder season.
I'm a little surprised with that. And you mentioned the Scottish culture. I will have to admit, that was one of those things that went over my head. The relationship between Nova Scotia and New Scotland just was lost on me, that there was any connection at all between the two.
I'm not going to be an expert in it, but I do know that when I looked it up, it was the idea that the Gaelic settlers came to Nova Scotia around 1770s, something like that. Mm-hmm. They were obviously escaping cultural suppression and all kinds of stuff in Scotland. They called it the Highland Clearances. And so they came on over and started setting up shop in these areas of Nova Scotia and Atlantic Canada, basically.
And what kind of itinerary would you recommend for Nova Scotia?
Like I said, we did a road trip. So I think that's a perfect way to see it. If you have enough time and you can get a car and just drive it, I found that to be really wonderful way to see a bunch of different areas. And the interesting thing is that actually Nova Scotia, it's probably best known for the Cabot Trail, mm-hmm. which is up north in Cape Breton, basically, northeast, basically. It's been all over magazines. It's one of the best drives in the world. But that's beautiful, but the rest of it is also really great, too. So they've got this whole wonderful kind of trailway system throughout the whole region that highlight different things like the Lighthouse Trail or the Maritime Trail or the Evangeline Trail. And these are all different sections of the province, kind of. So,
and when you use trail here, we're talking roads, not roads. Actual trails. Okay. Yeah,
right. yes. We were in a car, not on horses.
Just checking.
yeah. So the trails are really great. And it's really kind of cool because they're all marked with, they each have like a symbol. Obviously, the mm-hmm. Lighthouse Trail has a lighthouse. But it's really easy to follow. So you just kind of follow these normally along the coastlines to kind of circumnavigate the whole region. So you get the whole feel for all of the towns just beyond just the Cabot Trail, which I like.
And you got that map from the tourism board or?
Yeah, there's a great map. It separates all the little regions and what they're all called. And it gives you the symbols so you can kind of see what each one's about.
Okay. And where did you start and what was your first stop?
Well, the main airport and transportation hub is Halifax. So mm-hmm. we actually took the train from, well, we went from Toronto to Montreal and then took there's a really great train via rail, Canada via rail. Mm-hmm. And it's called the Ocean Route. And it's basically a little over 24 hours. It might have been about 30 hours. And it's an overnight train. You can get a little sleeping compartment with your own bathroom. It's really fun. I love traveling by train and so does my mother. So we went up there and arrived in Halifax. So we trained into Halifax. We got a car.
And just to put that into context, what you're telling me is it's 24 hours by rail further east than eastern Canada.
Yes.
Because Toronto is already in the eastern portion.
That's
true. It's not the far east of the area, but it is just north of New York State for us, just north of western New York State. So we're fairly far east by the time you get over there to Nova Scotia.
Yes, you're in a couple other time zones, actually. And I think it was around 900 miles, I think, from Montreal up to Halifax. Hmm. Pretty train ride. It was a really interesting way to get there. You go through New Brunswick and then cross over into Nova Scotia. So that was nice. And then, of course, when we finished our road trip around the area, then we finished in Halifax, too, and flew out of Halifax.
Got it. So before we leave Halifax, what should we see in Halifax or do or taste or experience?
Well, like I said, I love the small towns better, but Halifax had mm-hmm. a couple of really cool things we loved, mainly the Citadel. Like I said, I was traveling with my mother. She's 77 years old. So we had to find things we were both interested in. And this was one that was pretty cool. The Citadel was just basically an old fort. It was built, I think, in 1828. It took a while to build, though, because it wasn't finished until 1856. But it was basically to deter an overland assault on the city. And so it sits way up high on a hill as kind of a lookout and guards the docks, the ports, that kind of stuff.
And what you're really saying, it was probably built to protect them against those Americans, because we're the only ones who've ever invaded Canada, having done
That's
it twice.
True.
So,
Yes. Well, it did its job because okay. No one ever attacked. So now it's a nice historic site, and they call it kind of a living history site. So it's one of those fun, and it's also fun for kids because they have a bunch of people there dressed up as the troops, and they all have their roles that they play, whether that's drummer, bagpiper, I don't know, in the infantry, whatever. So that's pretty neat. So you can walk around there. The other thing that I thought was really cool, silly but cool, they have a noon gun every day that they shoot off from the citadel from an old cannon. Mm-hmm. And it's this whole like pomp and circumstance around it. So it's pretty cool. And then they even, in the modern day, they even have a Twitter account that's called, I think it's called Halifax Noon Gun. And every day at noon in Halifax, it sends out one tweet and it says like, boom.
And that's the whole Twitter account.
Yeah, that's it.
That's funny.
But it's kind of like the modern day, I don't know, like town bell or something, right? We really enjoyed it there. The history was interesting. You had music, bagpipe players, so you kind of got that Celtic history in there too. The grounds were great and a great view of the city because it's mm-hmm. up high on the hill. So that was one of our favorite things in Halifax. They have a great little waterfront. I got up early in the morning and went running. It was fun. It's a lot more touristy, obviously, as the day goes on. And there's some museums along there too. So lots to do. Also for kids, lots of kids' museums and things like that, interactive stuff.
Restaurants or hotels that you would recommend?
Yeah, we only had a couple of nights or a couple of days there total, so at the beginning and the end. We stayed in the Halliburton House in Halifax, which was really cool. It was this, not really a house, but it was a trio of heritage townhouses that were redone. And it was a great location where you could just walk right down to the wharf and then go to all these different restaurants on the wharf.
And by heritage house, so in Canada, that's the system by which something would be the equivalent of a historic monument in the U.S.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. It reminded me a little bit of Boston, honestly.
Okay.
Like old townhouses in Boston. We ate at this really cool restaurant. It was a historical restaurant, too, called, I think it's now called the Five Fishermen Restaurant. It, of course, has all this history behind it. It used to, they say it's haunted, like most cities they talk about these days. It was there during this big Halifax explosion. It used to be a funeral home. So it has this really interesting history, too. And the food is great. The wine selection is definitely high end. The wine selection is vast. So that's another good kind of higher end place. Otherwise, for food down on the wharf, there's a bunch of like places where you can get like fast food, but very local stuff.
And seafood being predominant there down by yeah. the wharf, one would guess. Okay. Is there yeah, a specific yeah. seafood dish one should have in Nova Scotia?
Well, I have to say I OD'd on lobster, so I don't know if I would call that a seafood dish, but we ate huge amounts of lobster. I didn't eat any in Halifax, but we did in other areas because I think it starts in May. May running till like July or August is lobster season in different areas. And each region mm-hmm. has lobster season at a different time.
Okay.
So there's also a map of that. So you can kind of see what their time frame is. But there were plenty of places that had lots of lobster.
Excellent. And then what are your highlights outside of Halifax?
As far as towns go, I would say a couple of my favorite were Lunenburg, which is an old fishing town down towards Peggy's Cove. It's actually past Peggy's Cove. Peggy's Cove is a very famous lighthouse, big tourist area. Well, big for Nova Scotia, but a frequent stop for most people mm-hmm. along the lighthouse route. And then a little bit further down is Lunenburg, and it's an old fishing town. However, I will say that now it's quite touristy, which is fine. Lots of restaurants and little shops and golf courses and stuff like that. However, when I was there, there was a massive rainstorm going on. A big storm system had moved through. So we got our real good taste of like that northeast type weather, mm-hmm. basically, and it just poured. But we found a lot of really great stuff to do there. There's some great museums there.
Such as?
The Fisheries Museum in Lunenburg is really nice to see. And granted, they have some fish and lobster and stuff like that you can see, kind of like an aquarium for mm-hmm. kids. They have a lot of really cool displays for kids, I will say that. But the upstairs is one of the pieces that I really like that went through the fishing history. So all the different boats and ways that they used to fish, which was pretty interesting. And then they had a couple of old fishing boats out on the dock that were preserved. And my favorite part about that was you could go on to the boats. So like I said, it was pouring rain. So I had my umbrella. I went out there and there weren't many people obviously there. But what they do is they put on each of the boats, I think they had two of them at a dock at that point. They put retired sea captains on there to kind of just be there to answer questions or tell stories. And so I sat with this old sea captain and listened to stories and asked him questions for probably, I don't know, 40 minutes. It was fascinating. It was like straight out of a Hollywood movie. He started when he was 14 years old, was a captain of a ship at 18, just interesting stories and his family life and stuff like that. And then you could, of course, walk around the boats, see what the crew's quarters were like, that type of stuff. So I found that to be really interesting.
Excellent.
The other thing I happened to do in Lunenburg was, it was pouring rain, but the show must go on. So there was something called dory racing, which I knew nothing about until I looked out my hotel room window and I saw all these people standing out in the rain in boats. And I'm like, what are they doing? So I got all my rain gear on and went down and started talking to them and found out that this was like the 61st year of dory racing. And it's a annual competition between Lunenburg and Gloucester, Massachusetts. And it started years ago, kind of on a bet of who had the best dory rowers. And dories were old fishing boats that they used to send out. Those were like the stackable wooden boats that the bigger fishing boats would bring out. And then they'd put these young kids on them and send them out to go drop the lines, basically.
And I'm picturing a Leica rowboat, except pointy in both the front and the back.
Yes. And it's a little deeper, I would say.
Right, the high sides
for the high sea. Yeah. So that was really interesting. So I met all these people during the race. They gave me advice on where to go eat and stuff like that. It was fun. It was great. Took a bunch of pictures in the rain. I was quite happy.
And they recommended where to go eat.
Oh, there was this old local bar called The Knot. And it wasn't, I can't say that it was anything super special. Mm-hmm. I did have scallops, but the cool thing was the ambiance. I mean, most of the things in Lunenburg, like I said, it caters more towards tourism. So there's a lot of lovely, lovely restaurants kind of along the main drag. But this was really a local bar. And I walked in there and it was just like, you know, full of people and activity. And we got the, I think, bacon wrapped scallops and beer and felt a little bit more connected to the place.
Excellent.
The other town that we both really fell in love with, Guysborough, which is a little northeast of Halifax. That was actually the last town we went to. So Lunenburg was the first one. And then we kind of went around the whole area and we finished in Guysborough. And Guysborough is really tiny, not at all like on the tourism map, I would say. I think there's only about 200, 300 people in the town. But that's kind of why I liked it. That side of Nova Scotia and that area isn't really considered the popular tourist area.
That side of Nova Scotia.
Oh, so, well, actually, it's this. So it's that.
Is there a visual I am missing here? Are we pointing?
Oh, sorry. It's basically northeast of Halifax. And that area, it isn't traveled as much. It isn't talked about as much in very small towns. And it's towns that are actually kind of dying out, of course, because the fishing industry is dying out and the newer generation is moving to Halifax to get jobs or beyond. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting area. I don't know how well it's going to fare throughout the years, but I really loved Guysborough. They're doing a nice job. Oh, they had one really nice bed and breakfast there called the DeBars Manor Inn that we stayed at. It was an old like sea captain's house, I think it was. And then there they had a little bar. They were brewing beers there. They did a coffee roastery, little cafe, kind of rebuilt the waterfront a little bit. So they're trying to really kind of keep that ambiance. But we really loved that area. It was just simple. There are obviously houses all over Nova Scotia with that type of architecture because that really is their background.
Excellent. Where to next?
Do you know about the Bay of Fundy?
The biggest tides in the world.
Yeah, so that was actually one of the reasons why my mom wanted to go there. She wanted to go see the Bay of Fundy. She had heard about it. The strange thing is, the story is, she actually is terrified of water. And so I could never quite figure out why she wanted to go see this big tidal change. But after digging a little deeper, I found out that what she was interested in was because the tides go out so far that you can actually, in her mind, she's like, I can walk on the bottom of the ocean without getting wet.
Okay,
that makes complete sense. Then we'll go to the Bay of Fundy. So that's what we did. That's kind of the other side. So that would be more of the western side of Nova Scotia.
And it's the southern coast too, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it runs all the way up, but yes. And so Nova Scotia on one side and it's New Brunswick on the other, basically. That's kind of the Bay of Fundy. So yeah, it's has the highest tidal range in the world.
And I want to say it's 12 or 20 feet and I can't remember which.
Oh, no, much higher.
Oh, really? How high is it?
Well, what I researched was it says up to 53 feet a day. Now, that that's probably the max. But they said that's kind of equal to a 5-story building. And it's all within six to seven hours for the tidal change. So very interesting. As you drive that side of the coast, that was the, I think that trail was called the Evangeline Trail. Mm-hmm. That area over there is very agricultural. So a lot of the farming for Nova Scotia is going on over on that side. Then there's the Bay of Fundy, of which there's some really steep like cliffs and stuff like that that border that, which is neat. The hard part for us in the driving holiday piece is the fact that we were always on the move. And to really see the change, you have to kind of stay in one place for a little while, right? So that was a little bit harder. But we still got to experience different times of the tides, which was really neat. And you would see, like, you'd go by these little towns and the boats would be sitting in the mud on the ground where 6 hours earlier there was water. So it was interesting to see that, to kind of see even how these boats were all docked and they would end up in the mud, basically. There was one area where we went to there, and that area over there is known for their scallops. There's a little town of Digby, which is supposed to be the scallop capital of the world. Mm-hmm. Big scallops. They were good. And then we found one of my favorite places, a little place called Hall's Harbor. And that was, you had to drive all the way out to one of those kind of cliffs to the edge. And there's not a lot of roads that go out there, and they're small. And this was a tiny, tiny little, I can't even call it a town, a village. Maybe like 6 homes, but out there they have a lobster place that actually is exporting lobster a lot to China, is what I found out. So they do a big export business, but then you can also sit there. It's called Hall's Harbor, and they have this thing called the Lobster Pound, and you can drive on up, order your lobster, and then sit outside and eat it. And during that time, we probably saw the tide change about 6 feet. I mean, we were there for a good hour and a half or so. So that was neat. You could just see the boats that were going down, 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 down. But the lobster was great, super fresh. They have, like I said, it's called Lobster in the Rough. And you basically go and you go inside the building and they have all these tanks of lobsters, different sizes. And you point to the size you want and the one you want, and they take it out and they put it in this little gray pail kind of thing. You take it over, they weigh it, and then you walk it its last little green mile, basically, over to the guy in the cookhouse, and he takes it from you with your name, and then they actually do the boiling in the Bay of Fundy water. Like they take water from the Bay of Fundy and they do that. That's how they boil it. And then it's brought out to you. So really, really fresh stuff.
And I'm going to guess that the Evangeline Trail then is named after the poem by Henry Wadsworth Longfellow. So there was an Acadian girl named Evangeline that he based his poem off of that was about the expulsion of the Acadians from this area.
Okay, so there you go. There's your Acadian history there too. Yeah, that would make complete sense.
What surprised you about Nova Scotia? I mean, it's Canada, and Canada is very similar to the U.S. It's not like it's a foreign country in many ways. It's very familiar, very close by, but you're kind of off in the corner.
One of the things that we encountered that was surprising to me was because you're going through all these small towns, the locals are very proud of their heritage, of course, and very proud of their towns. And so we actually kind of had an itinerary, but there were a couple of days where we just chucked it completely and followed the lead of the locals. So we'd stop in somewhere and we'd ask them, like, oh, what should we do around here? Or they would just offer it up more often than not.
And you're asking at the place where you're staying usually?
Where we're staying, or at a restaurant, or at a winery. Okay. stuff like that. You'll have out a map and a piece of paper and they'll be telling you all this stuff. And we just kind of decided, let's just follow this breadcrumb trail that the locals leave us and see what we encounter. And that was some of our best days. We came across some great little cafes. We went to some, there's lots of really kind of funky artists and little galleries and stuff like that. But everyone is just so...
More in one region than another, or...
No, this happened to be down around on the Lighthouse Trail. It was an area actually where we did this one day. I mean, this is really kind of all over, but one of the days where we really kind of followed this local advice trail was in an area around, I think it was a town called Petite Riviere. Mm-hmm. They have a winery there, and so someone had told us to go there. There's also Le Havre. And Le Havre has this great bakery, but even before that, someone had told us, you have to take the old Le Havre ferry crossing. And it is an old ferry, so it only goes like every, I don't know, hour or two, and it's $5. And so we drove down there, and we met the ferry, and when we were on the ferry, I started talking to a guy who happened to be walking. He walked to the ferry stop and took the ferry over, and he was a local. And then he's like, oh, you got to stop at this bakery. And he's like, I'll have coffee with you. Just stop here. So we did. So I'm like, okay, mom, let's do this. So we went and had coffee with him and heard his stories. And then he recommended more places down the road. And so it kind of turned into this whole like adventure. And so that was around that area. So it was around, along the Lighthouse Trail, past Lunenburg, or in this area, like around Le Havre and Petite Riviere.
And past the random encounter on the ferry where it's going to be hard to direct people to find that person, is there some local that you would wish everyone could meet?
Well, you know what? The one that I remember just made such an impression, and maybe it was because of his stories. That was the captain of the boat that was there, the retired the boat captain. Yeah. And his stories, like I could have sat and listened to him for a long, long time, but my mom was probably wondering where I was because she hates water so much she wouldn't even go on the boat. So I was there for a while. But it was just, I got a real feel for what it would be like growing up there from him in that time. And I think everyone should go meet him at the Fisheries Museum in Lunenburg.
Excellent. Did you have, I don't know if you used a guidebook and had any comments on what the guidebook said to see if there were any places that they recommended that you would pass on?
I didn't really use a guidebook. We did actually, if you write the tourism board, they will send out a packet of information like you would not believe. Like, seriously. So we did that about a year earlier because my mom had been wanting to go to Nova Scotia for a long time. So I sent off requesting a packet of information. They sent it, and then my mom kind of looked over it. Lots of information there.
And we should say that that's actually a good reference. A lot of tourism boards will do that, not just in Canada, but in many different places. If you're really interested in going, we'll send you more information potentially than you would want.
Yeah, it was a huge amount, a huge guidebook, like where you can stay, all the lodging, all for free. And it's great. Yeah, if you actually write them before, you can get it before you go instead of like showing up and then trying to weed through all of that stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So we used that, and I got advice from the tourism board. And then the only thing I would say about just to kind of be careful of is the seasonal times. So things are very seasonal there because these are small communities, so they can't run this stuff year-round. They're mainly running like a lot of the festivals or even a lot of the Gaelic music and stuff like that is only like there during the tourist season, which really starts in July. I think it's like July through... for sure through September, probably into October, because it's a really great area to go for the fall to see the leaves change color.
Although that's going to be fairly early up there.
So maybe September.
Yeah.
Yeah. Follow them, their Facebook, the tourism page or whatever, because they'll have updates on when the leaves are starting to change.
Right. Sure.
They're a good source of information for that. But that would also be a great time to take a driving trip there too. You really get to see a lot. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so I would just be careful because there were a number of things where we kind of ran into where we expected to like show up and every Monday there's this Gaelic concert or something like that, or this museum is open and we'd show up and it wasn't open or there wasn't something going on because they all
you were there in June.
Yeah. They're like, it's June. No one's here in June. Like, well, wait a minute. And it's true because like even their kids were still in school in June. The kids didn't get out of school until July.
Wow.
Yeah. Huh. It was really stunning.
Wow. I would have hated that. And I loved school.
So yeah, that was that would be the only thing I'd kind of watch out for from the guidebooks, is just know that a lot of the stuff is seasonal, and so be aware if you are going to go during like the shoulder season to just check ahead probably.
Okay. You're standing in the prettiest spot in Nova Scotia. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
There's one place that did stick out to me, and that was along the Cabot Trail, actually. It was at the midpoint of the trail. In fact, there was a hotel there. We didn't stay there, but we took note of it because we said, next time we come, we want to go there. The hotel was called Mid Trail Lodge, and it was exactly midway on the Cabot Trail. And it was vast, and it was up on this big cliff, so it was really windy, but gorgeous views of this like cliff coastline. And when we pulled in there, there's a restaurant and a hotel, but we just kind of pulled in and asked if we could go out and look at the view, because they had all these beautiful Adirondack chairs lined up in all these rainbow colors where you could just sit out there and enjoy the view. So that's what we did. And they were really nice in letting us do that. And we, I don't know, got a soda or a drink or something like that. But that was a great moment for both of us. We just loved it, because then, strangely, shortly after that, when we got back in the car and started driving, we ran into weather like you wouldn't believe, like another big kind of fog and storm that lasted another day and a half. So that was kind of the last nice look at the Cabot Trail that we had.
I see. And my understanding is that is named after John Cabot, the explorer.
Yes.
Who may or may not have been in Nova Scotia. I guess there's some controversy about that.
But, okay. Yeah, I'm not sure. It got named the most beautiful drive in America, or in one of the most beautiful drives, I should say. I think that was named by National Geographic for a good reason. It is. It's gorgeous. And you go through all these little communities. Some of it's along the seaside and these cliffs. Some of it's little communities and beautiful little wooden churches. There are churches everywhere in Nova Scotia, like little tiny ones that are super picturesque. I found that area really stunning, breathtaking.
Excellent. I have three more questions for you. Before I get to those, anything else someone should know before they head to Nova Scotia?
Bring a coat. I mean, it's cooler than you think, even if you go in the summer, in July. Mm-hmm. You're up there a bit. So coat, some rain gear, or don't be afraid to get wet, because it will still rain there quite a bit. When they get storms, they're big. But it's kind of part of the fun, too. So
okay. Last three questions. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Nova Scotia.
Up on Cape Breton, on the Cabot Trail, there's a big national park there. And that's part of the trail that you drive through. And they had the cleverest game, which was basically a hunt for these red Adirondack chairs. So once you got into the park, have you heard of this?
No, I haven't.
Oh my God, it's the coolest thing ever. My mother and I were just nuts about it. They did it last year. I don't know if they'll do it this year. I hope they do, because it was very clever. And it did it. We were cracking up. We were having a fun time that whole day on the Cabot Trail, because we were hunting for these red chairs. It was called the Red Chair Challenge. And the mission was to find, they basically put these bright red Adirondack chairs, which are seen all over Nova Scotia, in different parts of the park. But these were not easy to find. And like some of them were way back on trails and so on. And basically, if you found one, then you took a picture of it and you submitted it to their Facebook page. And if you could find 5 out of the 10 chairs and put your pictures up, then like you were in a drawing for a contest or something. But I didn't even really care about that. It was like a fun chair scavenger hunt while you were driving around. And we looked hard. We found one. And we even had to like hike into it. It was above a waterfall. They were in these beautiful, picturesque areas. That was just, it was fun. It was great.
Fun.
Great way to see the park. Very clever.
Finish the sentence. You really know you're in Nova Scotia when?
Oh, you're putting on a lobster bib and cracking a lobster. We ate a lot of lobster.
And if you had to summarize Nova Scotia in just 3 words, what 3 words would you use?
Salty, proud,
okay.
And I kind of want to use a term that they use on their license plate, but it's more than one word. Canada's Ocean Playground.
Ah, okay.
That's their license plate motto, or their motto of the area, and it's true.
Excellent. Oh, salty. just always a tinge of salt in the air because you're never that far from the ocean? Or
there's that, but I actually say that more because of some of the people sometimes too. Okay. They're like these sea captains and stuff that you'd meet, these people that were in the fishing industry.
These
and
old salts.
Yeah, I loved it. They were cool. It was kind of like meeting farmers in Nebraska to me. They had interesting stories and they were intense guys or women, but yeah.
Excellent. Sherry, where can people read more about your travels?
Well, they can read about it on my website. So it's otsworld.com, OTTSWORLD. That's the main place. And I've written all about the Nova Scotia stuff, did a lot of photography and even some video of us walking on the ocean bottom. So there's a lot of stuff on Nova Scotia there under the Canada area, the destinations.
Excellent. Again, our guest has been Sherry Ott. And thanks so much for coming back on the show.
Thank you.
In news of the community this week, I heard from Tom, who wrote and said, a friend and I traveled to Egypt in January to work at a hospital north of Cairo. We worked for 5 days and played in Cairo for two. Before we left, I listened to your podcasts all about Egypt to study up on it. Loved the show, loved Egypt. It was the third anniversary of the Arab Spring while we were there. We felt completely safe and had a great time. Stayed at the Menu House Hotel while we were there. Rooms were $100 US a night. We were 100 yards from the Giza Pyramid Complex, one of the best hotel stays ever. We eat dinner every night looking at the pyramids. I dream about travels all the time, and your show is my favorite. Thanks for the work you do. Well, thanks so much, Tom. I was at the Canada Media Marketplace this week, which is where travel writers, bloggers, and podcasters like myself meet with various provinces from around Canada to try and pitch them why, for instance, they should have us over and or why we should write about their particular destination. And one of the people that I was quoting in terms of the value of the amateur traveler was Joe, who I also mentioned last week, who went to Vieques. And Joe said, I felt that I knew Vieques before I even landed. And that was because of the amateur traveler. He also points out that the bioluminescence were unreal, right out of a sci-fi movie, and I completely agree with that. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler. Thank you for people like Sam and Oppenheim, who went to amateurtraveler.com/love to tell their friends about Amateur Traveler on Twitter this week. It always helps when you spread the word. If you have any questions, feel free to send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com or leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. Join the conversation on the Facebook community or follow me on Twitter at Chris2X. And as always, thanks so much for listening.